SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. I was talking on that first break. That's on the first opening. I don't know how, if you lost me or you didn't have me. That was weird. No? That's really strange. All right. That was funny. Because I was shocked when I heard, yeah, that's weird. I went when I heard the music second time. I'm like, wait, I'm here. Let me think about what. I opened with the Prince of Wales, so I said, "Happy Prince of Wales Day!" North of the border, just across the bridge from Buffalo, Fort Erie, and we're actually going to talk to Ashley Mayhew. As it happens, because it's a fun race today. But there's lots to do even before we get to that. It's actually got a very full slate today, and that includes Jay Pridman, now that the Preakness field is together and in close proximity, and the wrap up from the Santa Anita weekend. So we'll get Jay's perspective on everything that happened at Arcadia, full 3 days, but Preakness, first order of business. We'll go through the field in a second. Let me give you a quick rundown lineup, and then we'll talk about the card that was put together, and it's really nice. All stakes card at Pimlico on Saturday, and of course the lead up Thursday and Friday with the very one, and the Chick Lang, and Pimlico Special on Friday, and then into the big card. But in addition to Jay, to look ahead, we've also got a Horse Health Today brought to you by Luberson and Reborn that features Dr. Dan Brown from Hallmark, the standing MRI equipment that is at Santa Anita. And it's exciting because it's really a quantum leap forward for racetrack practicing, both, you know, the veterinarian staffs of the barns, as well as the administrative vets, you know, the state veterinarians, in terms of being able to, you know, get snap diagnosis on horses that might be off. And we'll talk about a horse that is off. And I think everybody kind of on edge knowing what might be coming. We'll talk about that momentarily. I told you there's a lot going on. But Dr. Brown, we'll talk about the technology involved and what it means to have the standing MRI unit at Santa Anita in terms of the diagnostic capabilities. So I'm looking forward to that. Horse Health Today brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Andy Serling as well. And Jay and Andy and Dr. Brown and Ashley Mayo. Kelly Breen is expected in here as well today. So lots going on. And I suppose, even, you know, the Preakness thing isn't going anywhere, so I can leave that for a second. The word came yesterday up here from Saratoga, from the Oklahoma, that Midnight Bizu came out of her breeze just slightly off. Jeff Bloom, you know, the word had kind of was starting to circulate. And so Dr. Bramlage is going to give her a going over, and I don't know, given you know, given the importance of Midnight Bisou and, you know, the level of achievement and the performance level involved with her, you, if anything is even slightly wrong, it just doesn't, you know, doesn't really bode well. Everything that's happened already this year is a bit of a luxury that, you know, she was back and, you know, trying to, you know, add and enhance her already incredible resume. So we send out the best wishes to Jeff Bloom and all the partners. And they expect that as soon as tomorrow, they'll know more about what she might have tweaked. So Midnight Bisou. And while we're on the topic of injuries that have sidelined nice horses, win. And I haven't even had a chance to reach out to Mike Trombetta about it and Mrs. Weber, but he's got a tendon and has been retired. And it's really too bad after that unbelievable effort in the forego that made him a grade one winner. And it was a huge thrill for Mrs. Weber and for Mike. I mean, anybody and anybody that bet him from where he came when the chicklet had disappeared from the screen, right? You thought, ugh. Not today, but it was today, and it's really too bad. You know, he's a son of Hattrick, and he's going to get a chance to stand. We'll see what plans are made. The plans are pending, as they say, and I'll ask tomorrow. I'll ask Sid what he thinks. What kind of a program would be a good fit for win. He's out of a Smarty Jones mare, Miss Smarty Pants, who was nice and from it's a good female family, but we'll see. We'll see what the plan ends up. So there was a chance that that win was going to. Was going to participate in the Dirt Mile, but that's that. Let's before I talk about Indiana yesterday and that fun sequence, let's get you caught up on what went on in Baltimore yesterday. After we got off the air, the noon draw for the Preakness, and it Baffert. He just turned on the replay, Baffert. Did have it right, and Country Grammar did stay out of the entry box. So it ended up with a field of 11, and it's a fun field. It's an interesting field. You know, after the top contenders that, you know, we knew were already involved, and the return to action of Art Collector in particular, and Swiss Skydiver's participation, you know, making it, you know, an intriguing group. And let's run it down from the inside. The first of the three Asmussen runners, Accession, Calumet, Union Rags. Colt hasn't been seen since the Rebel, but working steadily at Churchill. And, you know, he feels like one of those horses that has, you know, has been out of sight, out of mind, and you know, you kind of forget about. But you know, there was nothing wrong with that performance running late at Nadal, seven ahead of Basin. So Accession, Union Rags out of the Tappet mare, bred by the Randall family, and $150,000 Keeneland Yearling. Took him a while to break his maiden. But you know, certainly the effort at fairgrounds in over the winter. And then that rebel effort. Nothing wrong with it. So accession, and he's going to be, in fact, let me give you the prices too, because that obviously came out with the draw yesterday. And let me scroll up and give it to you. 30-1. Mr. Big News, and of course, had a lot of fun with Chester Thomas yesterday out of the placement in the Derby. Mr. Big News draws the two hole, and he basically gets that that ever fast scenario, right? Or you know, any late runner type that looks to rally, and there is pace in here. That there's no doubt about that. Accession, another horse who comes, you know, largely from off the pace. Gabe Saez, of course, and Mr. Big News, 12-1 for Brett Calhoun. And Allied Racing, nom de course of Chester Thomas. Art Collector with the extensive win streak, if you had forgotten. Yeah, he's won five straight. Four. And with that DQ going back to November. But four straight as a three-year-old and draws the three-hole. Brian Hernandez Jr., 5-2. Second choice, Swiss Skydiver. Drew the four. Kenny McPeak coming off the Oaks effort, the very good Oaks effort. Already discussed the Robbie Alvarado addition to the equation. And 6-1 on Swiss Skydiver. 1,000 words. Didn't talk a lot with Baffert yesterday about 1,000 words. He does put on the blinkers. A little bit notable coming off of the win in the shared belief. But Florent Giroux gets on for the first time. 6-1 on 1,000 words from the five hole. Jesus' team drew the six, and the answer to the jock question, Hevion Toledo, ended up picking up the mount. And nothing wrong with Toledo for Jose D'Angelo, and actually had some fun this morning. I came across the video of Jesus' team. I keep going back and forth between Jesus' team and Jesus' team. What's the difference, right? There was a video of him getting off at the stakes barn, getting off the van. And I had really not noticed, you know, from the Jim Dandy or from any of the other video, the Haskell and everything else that he's participated in. I saw him at Jersey, but I really didn't notice at that time what a long body colt he is. He's like an aircraft carrier. Take a look at that video I put up. I'll ask Sid about this tomorrow. He's by Tapiture out of a Suave mare, and he is really long bodied. It just took me aback, actually. So I made a quip about his fuselage, because that's what he looks like. He looks like one of those 737 stretch aircraft. Jesus' team from midfield, 30-1. New York Traffic, the late addition. He also was going to be a surprise in terms of a riding assignment, and New York Traffic picked up by Hector Karamanos for Safi Joseph, coming off the Derby try, and before that, the very good effort behind Authentic in the Haskell, and New York Traffic, 15-1 from the 7. Max Player, the second of your three Asmussen runners, and Max Player for George Hall and the BLX Microshare team, Paco Lopez, and Max Player kind of got untracked late in the Derby, got the last big check, finishing fifth, came back out of it and bulleted in preparation, you know, and of course, you know, it's notable that Asmussen had a little bit more time now between Derby and Preakness to get to know Max Player. So, Max Player from the 8-hole, Paco, 15-1. Authentic draws the 9. Baffert quoted as being satisfied with that. He didn't want to suggest anything. He didn't draw the rail with his two horses. That in itself is notable for Baffert. He's always drawing the rail. But Authentic, 9-5 off the Derby and Haskell wins. And Johnny V looking for his first Preakness. And, of course, you know, for the lion's share of Johnny's career, the association with the Pletcher Barn, and really, this has never been a, you know, never been a big Pletcher priority. So Johnny, whatever variety of reasons, I think, 2 seconds in Preaknesses, but Johnny would love to add a Preakness to his outstanding Hall of Fame resume. Pneumatic, 20-1. Joe Bravo back aboard off the Pegasus win, and I had not, you know, on the when this came out yesterday, I had not noticed that price, the morning line price of 20-1 on Pneumatic. That's a nice number. That's a very attractive number on Pneumatic. He's been up here at Saratoga, very quietly working away since mid-August. Pneumatic. Winchell Homebred out of the lovely Teardrop, the Tappet mare. And we can come back to Teardrop as part of the complete. Who's he a sibling of? Teardrop. Is Tenfold out of Teardrop? I got to look that up. He, of course, is going to try to repeat in the Pimlico Special on Friday. But Pneumatic, I'm instantly attracted to Pneumatic as a price option, building the ticket in the Preakness. Draws the 10, and Jersey Joe comes down 95 to ride. And then Live Your Beast Life, late addition and supplement to the field. The wonderful Darby Dan family. And Bill Lawrence campaigning with George Averill. Coming out of the Jim Dandy placement behind Mystic Guide from the 11 hole, 30-1. So there's your Preakness. And it's nice. It very, very attractive final leg of the Triple Crown. It's obviously so strange to say that. But a field of 11. The rest of the action on Saturday, if you haven't had a chance to thumb through, Tina and I had some errands. We went to Saratoga yesterday, which actually I shouldn't have been doing, but on Yom Kippur, and one more final happy, healthy New Year to everybody. Hope you had an easy fast. But Tina and I ran into Saratoga, and there was a power outage, apparently, a transformer. And so the whole neighborhood from, like, you know, toward Wilton was blacked out. The traffic tied up, and the stores closed, and this and that. So it was kind of a goofy, kind of a strange, a bunch of errands to run, and got about two thirds of them done in parts of town that were unaffected. So Saratogians, and they said it was going to take 4 or 5 hours to. Apparently a transformer explosion. So don't know why what the connection was to. The fact is that we got back home about 7 o'clock, and I went and printed the PPs for the whole card. And, you know, the whole slate involves 11 thoroughbred races, and then there's even the 12th race, the grade one for the Arabians, as the nightcap. The Preakness itself goes off at 5:36, so make a mental note, and the whole card starts at 11 a.m. And it starts with the Salima, and this really, the way this all came together is really attractive, because you've got all the three-year-old races, both sexes, long and short, turf and dirt, and then the two-year-olds as well, the Salima and the Laurel Futurity, that are both, you know, historic races in Maryland, and kind of fun to have them as part of this card. And the whole day starts with the Salima and a field of eight. Chad Brown with an interesting pair, and as you know, as we get these days, there are some maidens among the 2 year olds, including one for Chad, Domain Expertise, Seth Klarman, A Kitten's Joy. Nice enough field. Got to get to know some of these a little bit. Yeah, there's horses moving dirt to turf and stretching out, so didn't spend a lot of time against it. The Gallarette put together a field of eight, and the horse that actually seven because it's an MTO. There's some nice names in here, including Juliet Foxtrot. The horse that kind of jumped at me, Steve Margolis for the Lowe's. She's on the warpath. Looks to have a really a nice style for this, and feels like she's got a big shot. Varenka in here for Grand Motion. Boy, Mike Maker. Maker is top to bottom across his various sheds where he's operating. Mike Maker has never had the depth that he's got right now. It's unbelievable. Really amazing. I mean, everywhere you look, and I mean, in every high-level race, Maker's got horses that are fits. It's stunning. The Ski Pat, you got the fillies and mares going short, and kind of an interesting field, including some veteran mare types, including Anthony Margata with Bronx Beauty. Luch has got a six-year-old mare by the name of Liza Starr, who we did see at Saratoga in a third-level allowance, and that's the kind of horse she is, and she's a bit of a stakes nibbler. She looks good in there. Liza Starr, maybe in the Ski Pat. It's arguable that aside from the Preakness and the Black Eyed Susan, you know, the major features, the 2 3-year-old turf events on Saturday are spectacular. The Murphy has always been one of my favorite races, and that goes as the ninth, leading into the Black Eyed Susan and the Preakness. But the hilltop for the 3-year-old fillies, wait till you sit down with this. This is as good a group and as well matched and an interesting group of 3-year-old fillies as you're going to find for the 1 mile turf event. It is, it's unbelievable. You've also got two, as part of it, you've got Field of 13, and you've got two North American debuters, Shimmering for Watership Down and Grand Motion, and Arno Delacour with a Camacho filly. I got to ask Sid about Camacho, not a stallion name you see that often, a German bred named Secret Time. Shimmering was Irish bred, Lope de Vega, out of a Dalekani mare. But the other one, the Secret Time for Arno Delacour and owner Giacomo Algranti, a little bit more of an unusual breeding that I'm going to need Sid to provide some insights. Vigilantes weigh in here for Shug and the Phippses. And Shug's Mid-Atlanta go-to rider, Forrest Boyce. This is it's a really interesting group. You've got the Merrymans are well represented. Anne has got Hollywood Hoopla on the outside, and Elizabeth Merriman has got Caraval in the down inside. Really, really good group of 13 for the Hilltop. The Miss Preakness, it's kind of some usual suspects like Monday Call and Wicked Whisper for the Lieblongs. Figures, I think, prominent in there. I'll tell you who's got who's well entered on the day, and that's Claudio Gonzalez. Has got, it looks like, several live chances, and he emptied the barn for this. He's got three of them in here. The Dinner Party Stakes, which it goes back historic terms at Pimlico, has, you know, been reinvented as the new name for the former Dixie. And the Dinner Party Factor This, Dr. Mounty, Maker, Some Like It Hop Around, and Hembry. It does feel like there's, even though it's not a big field, it does feel like there's an honest pace in here, which is nice. The DeFrancis Dash moved to this card as well. And it's got some well-known names in here, including Midtown Charlie Brown, Landeskog making a second start for Brad Cox. Nitrous shows up in here. Stan the Man, who, of course, John Terranova had lined up for the Vosburgh Saturday and scratch. So this was the option that he had in the back of his mind. Here's Gonzalez again with Bob Bones Eastern Bay. Lockie, who's got to be what? He's got to be like 9 years old. Seven. It feels like he's been around forever. Lackey, kind of a favorite. The Laurel Futurity I mentioned, and nice counterpart to the Salima, the two-year-olds. The Murphy for the three-year-old boys. Got a nice group. Feels like somebody's going to break through in here. You do have the Saranac winner, Bye Bye Melvin, in terms of class. You've also got Don Juan Kitten, second for Gargan. And the Ramses in the Saranac. Pretty much everybody coming out of one stake or another. Butchie Reed has got Monday Morning QB moving to the grass in here. His brother Mark, the Battle of the Reeds. Mark's got Jack the Umpire. Benny Perkins has got Reconvene. And that Reconvene broke the maiden at Monmouth, came back and won an allowance. Reconvene looks like he's going forward. Vanzi, Pino, Michael Pino's got some good chances on the day as well. Brad Cox with Andesite coming off the win at Ellis. Really good. Steve Claseris has got By Land and Sea, the Joe Imbizzi homebred maker. Jolting Joe out of a somewhat disappointing effort in the Dueling Grounds Derby. So they're coming from everywhere. And the Black-Eyed Susan. The typically run on Friday, but part of the Saturday action. Project Whiskey, you remember Butch Reed, you know, said he was heading here after they flirted with the Kentucky Oaks. Truth Hurts, who ran a nice race in the Bison City up at Woodbine for Chad Summers. So Darn Hot, George Weaver. Dream Marie in here. Matt Williams coming up, actually coming from Churchill's effort at the Kentucky Oaks, but coming from Florida, where he's based. Bonnie South out of the Alabama. Sharp Star, Horacio De Paz. Out of the try in the Fleet Indian at Saratoga, Mizzen Bow for Norm Cassie. Feels like she just ran. Well, I guess 3 weeks ago in the Bison City. Hopeful Growth out of the Oaks, where she was solid for Margotta and the violas, and Miss Marissa, Jim Ryerson, Landing Zone, Claudio Gonzalez, and Mark Cassie with Perfect Alibi. So a really nice pair, 11 for the Susan and 11 for the Preakness. And there is your action lined up, and it should be terrific. And thank you, Melissa Nolan, answering my question. I knew Teardrop. I knew Teardrop. There was a Winchell sibling involved, but Pyro. Oh my God, Pyro feels like a million years ago. And War Echo. There we go. Well done. Thank you, Melissa. we'll stay here for this first hour, and we're going to reach for Ashley Mayhew. I don't think she's been with us before. So let me, Casey, I got to give you the number. And Ashley, of course, has done a little bit of everything. Seen her in various capacities, but she's from Buffalo, I'm pretty sure. And she has been at Fort Erie. I don't know, 3-4 years at least. So we're going to visit with her because there's a couple of things I didn't yet talk about the field for the fort for the Prince of Wales, and one of the things that struck me about it when they drew the other day was the fact that Josie Carroll went ahead and tried and went ahead and entered and is running in here. And I didn't get the sense, if you remember, when we talked after the Queen's Plate, Josie Carroll did not seem that interested in running Mighty Heart here. So if you're going to use that as, you know, as your point of reference, I did not sense that she thought this was, you know, what she was going to do next. But here he is. So I had a funny exchange. I had a funny exchange with Mark Cassie yesterday, and he's got Bold Victory in here for Jack Oxley and the expensive Saratoga Yearling by Flatter. Is a maiden, and what's notable about him, I was looking at the figs, and I said to Mark, I said he's got a good dirt fig in here that race at Aqueduct, trying to break his maiden in March. And Mark came back, and Mark said, yeah, he's probably got the only dirt fig. There is a horse, Red Mercury, the Street Boss colt, who's also a maiden for Paul LaPlaine. And he at least has run on the dirt, and actually, as it happens, at Fort Erie. But it's mostly a field that is synthetic and turf oriented. So that that element, a big part of your decision making process. And Ashley Mayhew joins us from Fort Erie. Ashley, good morning.
How are you?
I'm very good, and I'm delighted to get you on. And I was sort of guessing. I know you're from Buffalo, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'm from Buffalo. Yep, that's where I'm born and raised. I left for a few years to go to college in Kentucky and then in Ohio, and somehow I ended up back in Buffalo.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Transylvania University in Lexington, and then I got my master's at the University of Dayton.
Very nice. So the Flyers, good deal. And where in Buffalo did you grow up?
Cheektowaga, so right near the airport, about a mile and a half, which is always nice when I'm looking to get away from the winter weather, that's for sure.
Well, and you don't need to explain to me where Cheektowaga is. And having spent many various paths through Buffalo for the most important, we're going to have to exchange some, some recommendations, some food recommendations
Yeah, known for chicken wings, that's for sure. Everyone goes to the Anchor Bar or they go to Dutch. Yeah. I don't think either of them are the best place, but that's my personal opinion.
Where, what's your favorite Beef on Weck spot?
For Beef on Weck, that's tough. Schwabel's is really good.
Yep.
I think that's probably the best
in the area.
I will say there's a place called the Barbell, which I think they have some of the best wings. They have a really good Beef on Weck.
I was a little disturbed because, Schwabel's is very intimate and too small for COVID conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went down to Louisville for Derby, they weren't open yet. And they also had that crazy thing where the car drove into the side of the building.
Yeah. That happened about probably a year or two ago, I want to say.
Yeah. And they were closed for like 6 months.
Yeah.
But for those people have heard me talk about Schwabel's before, it's one of the oldest continuously operated restaurants in the country, originated in the park in Buffalo as the Crystal Palace in like 1830. It's an amazing story, actually. I'm a Sabre fan, and I went to Colgate and got tons of friends from all over, from Williamsville down to East Aurora and all through town. So love Buffalo. Have you been? You go to the Blackthorn?
I have been to the Blackthorn Pub before. Yeah, it was. We hadn't gone there for a really long time. And I think they were featured on that Guy Fieri show, Drivers, Dive-Ins, and Drives, or whatever it's called. And we started going there for a bit. The Blackthorn Pub's pretty good.
Tina and I, when we came back from the Woodbine Mile, it must have been 2 years ago, and we went to Niagara Falls, and then we were driving. I said, let's go to Buffalo for late lunch, and I had never been, and we went, and it was just fabulous, fabulous. The Blackthorn, for those that something different, and very, very much a neighborhood kind of a joint. Talk about Fort Erie. The big day is here. It's Prince of Wales, and I don't know how much of what I was suggesting that you heard, Ashley, but it really feels like Mighty Heart is a very vulnerable favorite in here.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I know the OLG, the rankings came out for this race, and I don't know who picked what. I know that I didn't pick Mighty Heart on top. I picked Clayton on top. Just kind of thinking, big thing is dirt experience, and I heard you kind of talking about a lot of these horses don't have dirt experience. You're just going off of kind of morning drills and maybe pedigree. I mean, that's really all you have, and even some of these horses haven't breezed over the dirt. You see some of those breezes over the training track, so those are the ones I'm kind of looking for. But in terms of Mighty Heart and just kind of reflecting on the Queen's Plate, my concern, and I kept on kind of saying the week before, I said if someone makes the lead somewhat easy, or they can get out to the front, and they're not pressured all the way around the racetrack, I think we're going to see what happened in the same case of One Bad Boy last year, where he made the lead and things went his way. And for Mighty Heart, I think, to me, it was a more impressive performance than we saw from One Bad Boy. I mean, Mighty Heart really turned it on in the stretch, and no one was really making a huge move. Belichick came from off the pace. But I think kind of looking at how I anticipate the race setting up, I do think Mighty Heart has to go, and I think maybe some others will, but I like Clayton from the perspective of looking at how he's raced up at Woodbine. Typically, he's just sitting right off the pace. And I think in this race, and just a new surface, I'm pretty confident he'll be okay on the dirt. But I think having that stalking trip or maybe first time past the grandstand, he's sitting in third, I think that's where I'd want to be. And I think in the terms of Mighty Heart, it's going to be a little more difficult than it was last time.
I agree, and I want somebody that that looks somewhat versatile. There isn't a ton of obvious pace either when you kind of thumb through this.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the same thing in the Queen's Plate. I didn't necessarily see Mighty Heart being the one that made the lead. When you kind of looked at the race, even kind of looking now, I mean, Tecumseh's War has some early foot, really hasn't made the lead ever. The same thing with Dotted Line. Dotted Line has made the lead a couple of times. last year in his final start as a two-year-old, went gate to wire, and then we saw in the plate trial he tried to take them on the front end. So it's been kind of difficult with these races and even kind of the lead-ups to these Triple Crown races in Canada to figure out who's going to go, because you're right, there really isn't obvious pace. That's why I said with Mighty Heart, Mighty Heart showed kind of some early foot in the maiden victory in July, but I wouldn't say on paper, like, wow, that horse was going to go to the lead and do it the way that he did. So that's always interesting. And you think about these big races, are people going to change the tactics? You know, new track, new surface. Are they just going to give their horse the best shot and maybe switch things up? It really is, from a handicapping perspective, hard to kind of pan this race out.
I'm real intrigued by Bold Victory. It's going to be a square price. And, you know, you look from a, you know, from a pedigree angle, there's a lot to like about this colt, and it's still a maiden and all, but I think pretty inarguably his best race came on dirt at Aqueduct, and he's by Flatter. He's out of a Victory Gallop mare, and in fact, kind of interesting. I'm just noticing that Ivan Delos bred this this colt. And was $485,000 at Saratoga. So certainly was cut out to be a nice one. And the distance is going to suit. In that race at Aqueduct, he kind of stalked. And I think there's a lot to like here. 12-1, Husbands, Cassie, Jack Oxley. Okay, 12-1.
Yeah, I mean, up. I think that's a good price. I'm looking at the other 12-1 Mark Cassie personally, but you bring up a good point with Bold Victory. I mean, that race at Aqueduct kind of towers over the other efforts. I mean, I know he had a, you know, 2 seconds before that, but whatever in figure you want to look at it, you know, I look at buyer numbers usually. I mean, the buyer way better than any of his other performances.
Yep.
And you see, you know, like his stablemate, I mean, they both had some nice moves over the training track at Woodbine, you know, pretty solid work on the 20th. So, you know, Cassie sending a few down here. I mean, I think he's got confidence in his horses, and I think, you know, on the dirt, I think they both kind of have a shot, even though when you look at the other one that I mentioned, I kind of like Muskoka Giant, broke the maiden on the turf going a mile. But that's another horse that, you know, the pedigree, you think dirt's going to be just fine. Not really worried about a Son of Curlin. And then kind of looking at the most recent work on the 23rd there, 47-4, it's kind of motoring, you know, for a horse that doesn't have that dirt experience.
Kind of thumbing through. Dotted Line, certainly from a class standpoint, has kept very good company. Ran kind of an even race in the plate, and is one of these that is going to make the dirt debut. I think I've got to use a little Dotted Line in here.
Yeah, for me, you know, I bet a lot of exotics, exactus tries. He'd be a horse that he's probably in the try. You know, he's held his own. He's a three-time winner, kind of looking at others in the field. He's got a decent number of wins. And I thought the plate trial was a good effort from him. I thought that's kind of the move that they had to make, and they went, and they just, you know, were kind of outgunned but in the end by Clayton and Halo again. And I don't know, I think you look at the plate, if you don't watch the race, you look at the run line, 7th beaten by 12. I think that's, it looks a lot worse on paper than it actually was. I mean, you know, you have to figure in the winner, how things panned out for him and the trip that he got. I don't think it was a bad performance. And the dirt, you know, I've seen a decent number of these offspring of Signature Red, and they hold up on the dirt. They're okay. So he seems to be another one that's training well. I mean, I don't think, for the most part, anyone that's trained over the dirt has trained poorly, some better than others, though.
Did Signature Red win? Did he win at Prince of Wales?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
The name does not ring a bell as terms in the Prince of Wales.
As
it could be wrong, but I don't think so.
Huh. Dotted Line. After that, I don't. Yeah, Clayton. Clayton's 5-2, second choice, 7-5 on Mighty Heart. And then we jump to Tecumseh's War, who from a pedigree standpoint, he seems the least likely to take to the dirt in a dirt debut.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of that. I would agree with you 100%.
And Enchant Me, too. I mean, here's who's also a maiden. He's by Magician out of a Giant's Causeway mare. And Santino De Paolo, who was actually winless on the year, coming into this.
Yeah, he's a younger trainer. I don't think he's got a huge barn or anything, but yeah, you're right. So far he's winless this year. I think looking at Enchant Me, the workouts, I don't know what to take away from them. He's got a good breeze and kind of a slow 5 furlong drill. Then he's got a bullet breeze. He's still a maiden. He just missed last time out. Muskoka Giant beat him. And looking at that race, I mean, they kind of made the same move in there. I mean, they had a quick enough time to the half. They went 45-4, I believe, had enough to run at going a mile on the turf. And in the case of Muskoka Giant, got a pretty wide trip, was able to get the job done. I know some things went in his favor, other things didn't. In the case of Enchant Me, was kind of in that same trip, just outgunned in the end by Muskoka Giant.
Well, what's the final assessment, Ashley? Give us your try.
My final assessment, I would love to see the Triple Crown dream stay alive in Canada, but I think Clayton is going to take this one. I use Clayton on top, then I use Mighty Heart, and Price Play for third, I used Muskoka Giant. Got to go for Price. Can't get Chalk Chalks. I'm always searching, and that's the horse that I think might get a benefit, especially depending, like you said, what happens with the pace scenario. It's not clear. Are a couple horses going to go, or are they going to get an honest tempo? And if that's the case, I think we're going to see a horse like Muskoka Giant closing in the stretch.
Goes is the eighth race, the Prince of Wales, 400,000, and credit to Fort Erie for keeping the purse healthy under the circumstances. 5:37 post time as part of the 9 race card, and there's another one of the Massachusetts races, or as we call them, the Joe DiRico series, and. I don't know if you've met Joe. I actually can't come across the border, so you probably have not had a chance. But Joe DiRico's Dr. Blarney back at it, the 7-year-old, and he went down to Delaware most recently in an allowance. But coming back up, he won the Rise Gym, and that was a crazy circumstance early in the meet, Ashley, when the van got held up at the border and they couldn't make post time.
Yeah, it was insane, because I believe what happened is all the horses were coming across, and when the van came across, everything's going on right now in the world. COVID, can't cross the border, and you got to ship horses across, the help can't come. They weren't allowed, so we had to reschedule it, and luckily, almost everyone, if maybe one horse didn't come back, but they all decided they were going to go the next time the race is going to be held, so I pushed it back a week. And I have to say, Dr. Blarney, that looks like a paid workout if I've ever seen one. It was really impressive, and they decided to take him to Delaware, like you mentioned, next time. They entered him as a main track-only entrant in a race here that was supposed to be on the turf, and it ended up coming off. But they decided to go to Delaware. So it's exciting to see him come back. I mean, that's been the hardest thing for me, is not being able to go to the track. Since I can't cross the border. It's only essential workers and things like that. So he was a horse that I was really looking forward to going to the barns and seeing, because I think he's cool. I love horses like this. This is a crazy story. He got a mass bred 21-time winner. He's made over $650,000. I'd sure love to own him, that's for sure.
Well, and also, of course, St. Alfred, if anything should go sideways, Joe DiRico's 6-year-old Dublin Gelding is the other option. He himself has won $400,000, almost $650,000 for Dr. Blarney. And Joe's also got Dr. Ruthless in here, which is the sibling of St. Alfred. Nice to get a group of six of the Massbreds. And this has really been nice of Fort Erie to maintain this program for the Massachusetts natives that are still out there.
Yeah, we've loved having them there. It's an interesting, idea, and I know in the past they've looked for different host tracks. Finger Lakes was a track for a while that they'd race these races at, and I loved Suffolk. I loved the time I got to go there. So it's sad to not see them around, but it's really cool to see their breeding program, continuing to support the Massbreds that are still on the track.
There's also a maiden stake that goes as the fourth. The last dance is the second, 239, 337 for that maiden stake. Any other opinions on the card you want to offer?
You know, thinking of a maiden stake, I think the idea of this was kind of interesting on the part of the race office. I have to call out Jackie Eater for kind of putting this together. We run a couple cup races every year, usually four, I think, is the number. These are to kind of support the local horsemen. So to be eligible, you have to have two starts at the meet at Fort Erie. And, you know, we have a lot of horsemen that they just race strictly at Fort Erie, and that's where they've been for 20 or 30 years. So race four is the David Peaks Memorial Cup. David rode at Fort Erie for many years. He also rode at Woodbine, and he lost his battle to an illness. So this race is in his honor. And he was a character. He was goofy with a big heart. So when they came to making a decision about what they wanted the race to be, they thought, let's make this a maiden stakes race for maidens that have raced at Fort Erie twice for a claiming price in 2020. That would really give back to our local horsemen, and it's a nice little race for them. And it's a, you know, good memorial race for David Peak. So it'll be interesting. I think there's a heavy favorite in there that should be tough, the horse on the rail for Nick Maleni and Niju. But as far as the other races, you know, talked a little bit yesterday on a podcast about the late pick four. I think it's a really good betting sequence. I'm hoping the weather continues to kind of hold off. We did get some rain in the area overnight and a little bit this morning. So, you know, I'm in Buffalo. It could be different across the border. There's been days at Fort Erie, and it's been fine at Fort Erie, so I'm still waiting to get the official update on the track conditions as of now. But I thought the late pick four was a pretty good race, you know, kind of looking at race six. There's a decent, I think the horse will be kind of favored in there, the three eyes forward. But the horse to his inside, the two, Get the News, is a pretty well-bred horse by Tappet, who I think is going to shine a little bit more on the dirt today, especially if there's not too much moisture in it. So to me, if I was betting the card, I'd take a look at the late pick four. We got a 20-cent minimum on it. So you can definitely, you know, put together an affordable ticket and hopefully get a good return.
Nice. What about that? What about the race leading into the Prince of Wales, that seventh, the non-two lifetime?
Yeah, this is another good field. It's a big field, too. Hopefully everyone stays in there and will be on the turf. I thought the stablemates were interesting, the threes, Thor's Thunder, and the four, Kilkenny Prospect. You know, kind of looking at a mile on the turf, I think looking at Kilkenny, who comes off that maiden victory, and even the race before that was second in the maiden special weight event at 7/8 on the grass, he looked strong. But I actually think even though they're stretching out and the three, Thor's Thunder, has had a little bit of a, sometimes has like a stamina problem, I think he could potentially get to the front. He's getting some huge class relief coming out of those allowance races for non-winners of two life on the dirt. And his one turf effort that we saw at Fort Erie going 7/8, I think, was decent. So I'd be a little worried if he gets to the front that he might be able to kind of take them in gate-to-wire fashion. Those two stood out to me, and I think the other horse I used on my tip sheet is a six, Giant Balls of Fire. Something definitely went awry last time. He didn't fire the way he usually does, but if you ever watch his turf races at Fort Erie, I mean, he comes from the clouds. There's been races you don't really see him on the monitor, and, you know, he misses by a neck going 7/8. Now he's got that extra furlong. He'd be a horse that hopefully stays around the 5-1 morning line that it also toss in. So that's a race I think you'd have to go deep on a ticket. I don't think it could single there.
Nice. Nice. Ashley Mayo joining us. Ashley, where do they find your analysis, and where do they follow and latch on to you and your work? And I want to catch up before you go too on, you know, what you're, you know, what else you're doing, because you've done so many things in what feels like a short period of time, and you're in demand, as they say.
And I hope so. We'll see. I don't know how long it's going to continue for. But as far as my picks, we post them usually the day before, 2 days out on Fort Erie's website. You can go to forteracing.com. At the top of your screen, you'll see a betting tab. You can hit that. And on the drop down, there's a tip sheet tab. So I'll put my analysis up there. The full race card for today is up there currently. So I write about a paragraph or two for every race, and hopefully we'll get some winners. And then most active on Twitter, so you can find me, Ashley_Mayu. And as far as things I've done, yeah, it's been kind of a crazy ride. This is only my third summer at Fort Erie, and I work a full-time job out of racing. So this has, you know, been just kind of a hobby and a fun passion of mine, but been very lucky to do some freelance work for the Shronic Group, for Horse Racing Radio Network, gone to the Meadowlands, The list goes on. So looking forward to today's races and then going to head out later this week and head over to Pimlico for the Preakness.
Outstanding. Excellent. Well, enjoy Baltimore and the terrific card and all week, actually, came up very good. And the HRN coverage on Saturday, obviously. And is the dog going with you?
The dog is not. We just got back from the vacation. There's a package that I think just got delivered. So he's a 90-pound guard dog.
Holy cow. I love it. Ashley, thank you so much. We'll be watching today and the second leg of the Canadian Triple Crown. The plate gives rise here to the Prince of Wales. Of course, the Preakness distance, mile and 3/16. And then they'll go back to Woodbine for the mile and a half breeders on the grass. Ashley Mayhew, everybody. Ashley, continued success, and I appreciate the visit. Ashley Mayhew. There you go. So, Prince of Wales today. Got a minute or two to fill out, and we'll take the top of the hour break. Jay Privman is going to join us, and we'll get into Preakness with Jay and kind of wrap up the, to some degree anyway, the Triple Crown season and the road to the Derby. Of course, the road to the Derby went sideways and through the Belmont, and here we are on the back end. So looking forward to Jay's thoughts after the draw. Plus, we'll do the recapping of Santa Anita with Jay as well. Before we do it, I want to slip in the way things went yesterday at Indiana. And yeah, actually, it was pretty obvious that Rob the Rich, the Randy Matthews Istan gelding, was live, because he vied for favoritism with Chasing Anna, who, you know, really kind of felt like a beach ball. And when you looked at the race, and I made Chasing Anna the lone A, and then had Rob the Rich and Lavery as the B's or C's, and on a backup ticket. And Rob the Rich was in control early under Rodney Prescott and wins, pace 480. The toe stubbing came. How you let Brad Cox slip through the cracks at 9-1, I'm not sure. But good one, a street sense for the Kleins, no less. And I just didn't. You know, coming off the maiden win, and I don't know, I made a huge, huge miscue, just kind of, you know, glossing over good one. And this was the key horse in the sequence. 1960. Unbelievable. Miss Deputy Star, she ran really well in that Indiana bred maiden race. She just dug in, and would not let anybody there touch a justice. Kept probing, and just would not get by. And Miss Deputy Star, despite the inside draw, very nice. Brandy Steele with the Deputy Storm Philly. And we got 1060. Kai Nance, I thought, looked best on paper and wins easy. And then in the nightcap, that Scarlet City was one of the ones that could win. And I picked him fourth, and he ends up paying $13. And the nice pick five return of $4,886. They put another $200,000 in to the carryover sequence. So it was fun. It was certainly worth taking a swing. Nice, another nice pick five sequence at Indiana. They'll do it again today. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Jay Privman joins us next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com. Serious.